Blog Talk Radio.
Talk with Angela Butler. Today's interview is with from the state of Louisiana, Senator Bowie. How are you doing, sir?
Hello.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, this is Representative Bowie.
Yes, sir. Yeah, yes, sir. I was just introducing you. Thank you for agreeing to come on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, I'm very glad to have you on Show Talk with Angela Butler. Like I was saying, I'm sorry about the last time I got ill.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was sorry to hear that at that time, but I'm glad you're doing better, definitely.
Okay. All right. So, you're the representative from the state of Louisiana. What I'd like to find out is if you intend to run for any other offices besides the office that you hold now. All right, everyone, sorry about that. Representative Bowie.
We got disconnected. The call dropped.
Yes, I see that. I believe that was on your end.
Yes. And I think the last thing you asked me was or said was that I am state rep for District 97 in the Louisiana legislature. House of Representatives. That's
yes, sir. So I would like to ask you this. How did your career start in politics?
Okay. Prior to offering myself for public office in 2015, I was in higher education. Specifically, I was a professor and then became chancellor of Southern University at New Orleans. And so when I retired in 2013, I had served at the university for some 38 years and had been a community organizer prior to that. So public service and a public being a public servant is what I chose as my professional career, if you will, as well as my duty as a citizen. So once I retired, I then focused on and have always been concerned about the quality of life for the constituents of New Orleans in particular, but our state in general. And so when the opportunity came to actually be where social policy laws are made that impact the quality of life of our citizens, it's clearly a place I wanted to be because prior to that I would always interact with elected officials. But this time I had the opportunity to become one and to represent those issues that are important to the citizens of New Orleans in general, the state in general, but District 97 in particular.
District 97. Mm-hmm. All right, that's your district.
Yes.
Representative,
and that district includes District 97 includes Pontchartrain Park, about 75% of Gentilly, a little bit of Faubourg St. John, and a little bit of the 3rd and 5th wards of New Orleans.
Yeah, so your career, you've been working with the public and for the public, but my understanding is you were elected in 2015?
Yes. I was elected in 2015 to fill the unexpired term of Jared Brossett, who was the state rep for District 97, who was elected to the council of the city of New Orleans. And so I served 1 year of that unexpired term, and then I won a four-year term in 2016. So I'm serving now from 2016 to 2020.
Okay, that's okay. All right. So will you run for any other office after this next term or this next election? Will you be running for anything else besides representative?
Well, it just depends, because for me, as I indicated earlier, my interest in offering myself was because there was a void in the leadership for the district, you know, because Councilman Jared Brossett now, he moved from the rep seat to the council seat. So we didn't have anyone in District 97 who I felt, you know, could truly represent the kind of issues and advocacy that we needed in District 97. So I offered myself because of what I consider an absence of leadership. And so just as I offered myself for the council at large position that was voided recently, I always look to see if there is someone who can, you know, represent the interests of the citizenry, I can support that person. But if there is not anyone, then clearly because as a social scientist and one who has been a public servant all my life, then I will offer myself. So I guess my answer to your question is, if at the time I'm serving in the state rep at the end of that term, even though I'm eligible for two more terms to run for the state rep position, if some other office comes up that I feel there's not a person who can represent the constituency better than myself, then I'll run. If not, then I'll support that person. So it's not that, you know, I'm looking for another office. I'm strictly a public servant, and I'm offering myself based on need.
Yes, sir. You're humble, very intelligent, powerful, but humble, very intelligent.
Oh, thank you so much.
Distinguished man. I don't know too many politicians who are actually humble like you are, and most of them do not use the word public service, things like that. And I think that's what's missing in politics.
Well, I would agree with you wholeheartedly, because the role of an elected official is to serve his or her constituents. And so that's your number one, and as far as I'm concerned, your only concern. It's not to be influenced by lobbyists or others. It's to ensure that the people who vote for you depend on you to represent their interests. And that is the main reason, of course, I offered myself, to ensure that whatever I do in the seat as a District 97 rep, that I represent the interests of my people. But I've also been fortunate enough to be elected in my second year as chairman of the Louisiana Legislative Black Caucus. And so that same philosophy and value that I hold applies to that position as well. You know, that my focus as chair is to ensure that the caucus stays focused on creating opportunities and equity for all Louisianians, especially African Americans who have been left out by either discrimination or oppressive social policies.
Yes, sir. And I'm glad you said that too. Some people don't openly say that. Politicians. I'm glad you said for African Americans. I really am. With all the brainwashing that's going on and with the current president, in my opinion, this is not yours, Representative Bowie, but in my opinion, he's enslaving people mentally, psychologically also. And there's so much discrimination with pay, promotions on jobs. That's one form of discrimination. So I'm glad you said what you did. I really am. I've been trying to work with the Black Caucus for a while.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Yeah. And you know, one of the things we did as a Black Caucus on last year, actually a year before last, we had a special caucus retreat to identify areas that negatively impact African Americans in this state. And so we formed committees to actually now address those issues, specifically in economic development, the fact that less than 2% of the gross receipts go to African American business owners, the issue of quality education and public education. We have in Louisiana a disastrous policy, and so that's another piece, because you know, as you well know, in any society, in any community, the number one system that affords its members the ability to get what they need to be able to be independent and productive citizens is a quality education. And so when in Louisiana we are playing with the education of our children, it's no wonder that we unfortunately are number one in all of the wrong things. We also are fortunate to have a governor who's committed to try and change those things. So I'm fortunate to be serving at a time where we have a chance to create an environment of equity and fairness for all Louisianians.
Yes, that is great. That is wonderful. It's just wonderful to see, to listen to you, and also I know about you, even though I'm in Florida. So you're doing some really great things, and to reach somebody in Florida, and that's why I wanted to interview you. All right. So,
thank you so much.
What are the things that concern you about Louisiana in politics? Is there anything that concerns you or even impresses you?
Well, there's a little bit of one and a lot of the other. For instance, one of the things that concerns me is, unfortunately, we have a legislature which happens to be majority Republican. And it doesn't mean that because you're Republican, you know, you don't address progressive policies and do the right thing. But unfortunately, just like the National Republican Party appears to be trying to do just the opposite of what they're sent to Congress to do. It surprises me and concerns me that we have a Republican Party in our legislature that appears to do the same thing. For instance, in Louisiana, we have been trying to balance the state's budget. Unfortunately, when the new governor came in, Governor John Bel Edwards, the previous governor, Governor Jindal, took, at the time he came into office, a $1 billion surplus and left with a $3 billion deficit. And so we've been struggling for the last 3 years to balance that budget. Well, we were able to do some things the first 2 years, and now we have to address what we're calling a fiscal cliff, because some of the temporary solutions we developed in 2016 were some temporary taxes that roll off the books this year. When they roll off the books, we will have to deal with a $1 billion shortfall. But our Republican legislators, my colleagues, appears they do not want to deal with revenue measures. They believe we can cut $1 billion out of the budget. And unfortunately, that nothing could be further from the truth, because the only two places you have to cut in the general budget, because all other items are dedicated, meaning they're constitutionally required, is higher education and health and hospitals. And so those are the two greatest systems of need for our people in Louisiana. And so clearly we can't cut $1 billion from those two systems. We have to raise some revenue. So that's what troubles me, that our representatives across the aisle have played games with addressing the needs of this state fiscally, and now we are at a place where, as we say, the rubber meets the road. We can't play games anymore, because if we don't address this issue, it means that higher education and health and hospitals will have to be cut, respectively, of that $1 billion.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's one of the big pieces that concern me.
Yes, sir. Medical health and education is something in this country, not just Louisiana, that black people need.
That's correct.
Especially the health
part.
Well,
all people need, but especially African-Americans, those folk who have been locked out. You know, Louisiana was one of the places that historically the federal government had to sue because they discriminated in offering education opportunities. So, you know, in those states that have a history of discrimination, you would think they would do all they can to ensure that we never go back to that kind of environment in our communities ever again.
Yes. Instead, they're being more open about the way they feel about black Americans, Mexicans, and things like that. But that comes from Washington, D.C., to higher up. Okay, so that is okay to be openly racist.
Yeah, well,
okay.
Unfortunately, with the particular president we have, he has legitimized racism. You're exactly right.
Yes, he has. And they're more public than ever. He radicalizes them, in my opinion. But then again, he also says exactly what other presidents possibly might have did. Other politicians may have just smiled and went along till they got elected. And then they put in all these destructive laws and that really hurt black people and these deals and things over the years. So this may sound stupid, crazy, but I'm kind of glad that he's being openly racist, because you know you already know to watch him and watch what laws he's trying to pass, such as a lot of conservative judges. A whole lot he got that did. He might as well have built the wall already, because people are not going to want to come over here. The word is out. Don't go to America. They'll make you leave. Dark people.
I think you're right in that instance when you say, at least we know he is racist. I mean, you know, when you have other individuals who have on the suit and tie and not the white sheet, you don't really know. But at least we know now, not only based on what he says, but what he's actually trying to do. So I think you're right there. We know what we're working with. So if we're serious as a nation, we know we need to be mindful of and be vigilant to really pay attention to what this president is trying to do, not just to the country, especially to the country, but how he might negatively impact the whole world order.
Because
can create some world conflict.
World wars. He could create a war, start a war just by speaking. He can, like I said, World War III or something like that just by talking the way he's talking now. His words do have weight, even though it's not something that should be that way, but it is.
There's power in words, no doubt about it.
Yes, sir. Do you have any favorite organizations or charities?
Well, there's one that I especially have an affinity for. That's a youth group called Tambourine and Fan. It's a youth group that's in a part of my district, and its leader is one of our great civil rights activists, Mr. Jerome Smith, who was a part of the early civil rights struggle. He was a student at that time when students went to Mississippi on freedom rides and so forth. And so he is the executive director of this particular youth program, and they do wonderful things, education as well as recreational things for the kids. So that would be my favorite charity.
Yes, sir. All right. So you enjoy helping the youth. That's wonderful. How do you feel about bullying?
Bullying?
Yeah, bullying.
Oh, it's a behavior that we cannot allow to exist, and hopefully we will deal with not just the behavior of bullying, but we will deal with those things that create bullies and have the kinds of systems in place where when it raises its head, not only do we stop it, but we work with that young person who, for whatever the reason, feel they need to be a bully. You know, bullying is a behavior that is a manifestation of something else. And so we must have something in place at our schools and in our communities where we can work with those young people to stop bullying. And, of course, bullying takes all kinds of forms now because in addition to just one-on-one personally, individual to individual, physically,
bullying can be discrimination
also has the ability to bully online, you know, through technology. So with this new technological advance, we also have to be able to monitor and put preventions there as well so we can stop this particular behavior.
Oh, yes, sir. I understand what you're saying. That's wonderful, what you just said. And okay, so this past weekend, did you participate in anything over the weekend for the state of Louisiana, the Women's March? It wasn't just the Women's March. It was Black Lives Matter there at NAACP represented. It was millions and millions of people worldwide marching and with signs. I believe there were 500, if I'm not mistaken, 500,000 people in Chicago. 85,000 people.
That was a great weekend for advocacy for a better quality of life in this country. What I was involved in this weekend, though, was I was participating in a few neighborhood meetings in my district. Usually those meetings are on a Saturday, and when we're not in session, because they usually have them all around the same date, I sort of stagger, you know, which meeting I go to make sure I go to each neighborhood or as many of them as I can. And so that's what I was doing this weekend. I was visiting some of my neighborhood associations.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful, too, that you visit neighborhoods, the associations there, and talk to the people within the communities. That's wonderful.
Well, thank you. After all, that's who I represent, right?
Do you believe that the majority of the youth are going in the right direction, or are the majority of them not? Because I believe young people get a bad rap, young black Americans do, in my opinion. They get a bad rap, and it's not easy for them in current day times, even though you would believe it would be with the internet, computers, things like that. Do you think that they're doing better than what most people believe, or the mainstream media portrays them, or worse?
Well, I think the majority of our young people actually are not having the opportunity to fully develop, because what we have done as a society is to allow certain institutions to deteriorate, because it is those public institutions that provide the guidance and development for young people. For instance, when we struggle like we're struggling as a nation to provide
yes.
quality public education to our young people, it says that we are failing them. See, young people are like sponges. They're taking everything around them. And if we allow negatives to be a part of what they take in, then that's what we can expect from young people. On the other hand, there are young people who get those positives, and what we see is positive behavior from them. And so from my perspective, because I understand that we as a community are responsible for developing our children, whatever we see that's negative behavior, I clearly understand that it's because we have failed to provide what we should for those young people.
I agree. I agree with you. Everything that you said. All right. So as a whole, what is the most important thing about Louisiana that is most important to him, or rather District 97?
Well, to me, the number one challenge is to adjust the institutions of the community to ensure that they do what they're supposed to. For instance, as a community organizer and a social scientist, I understand that a community basically has five responsibilities. And the responsibilities are carried out through certain institutions. For instance, if we're talking about the production, distribution, and consumption of goods and services, well, that happens through businesses, and those businesses provide jobs. And so one of the things I'm concerned about is the fact that African Americans don't have the opportunity to participate in the economic system of communities. That is,
no.
A strong community must have full participation of all members. Now, you take a city like New Orleans, where the majority of the population is African American, but you have less than 2% of the businesses run by African Americans. And so something's wrong with that picture. That's why you have so much poverty in communities of African Americans, because when you look at who's benefiting, it's not all citizens. It's only some citizens.
Yes, sir. I understand what you're saying, and I agree. That seems to be the goal, to keep black people in poverty and keep black people against each other and keep black people in prison. But there's a lot of black people have woke up and see what's going and know what's going on and understand. So hopefully as a nation, not just Louisiana, that we as black people can uplift each other and help each other.
Here's my perspective on how you change that. And that's one of the reasons I offered myself as an elective office. You see, at one time in America and in the community, it was the law to discriminate against African Americans. And so systemically, things would be put into place to keep African Americans from participating.
Yes.
Well,
yes,
this is 20.
Systematic discrimination.
That's right. That's this 2018 now. So we could change that. I mean, African Americans could change that. But what it has to come from is the leadership. And unfortunately, we have leaders who are doing more harm for our people than help. That is, and particularly where I am in the arena of public service. We have elected officials who are doing things that are not in the interest of the people they represent. They're doing it in the interest of the oppressor. And so that's one of my major concerns, too, because here's what I know. I know that, for instance, as African Americans, we earn and spend more money than four nations around the world. And so when we talk about economic development and unemployment, if we spend only 30 cents of every dollar with an African-American entrepreneur, do you know that we could almost eliminate unemployment in our community? Because when black businesses have work to do, production distribution, they're going to hire black people. And so, you know, employment wouldn't be an issue. And so the issue becomes, while racism is still alive, because America is designed the way it is, racism should not be an issue for us anymore, because we earn and spend. We're the largest consumers in America, African Americans are.
Yes.
You know, if African Americans would stop spending, I mean, so stop buying, right? We would seriously impact the economic system. So we have, a certain economic power. But we also have political power. We have more black elected officials now than ever before. We have public education that used to be in our community, but when they came with this new focus of charter systems, that was a move to privatize public education, and that is having a serious impact on public education, not just in the communities in general, but in particular African-American communities. And so I said all that to simply say that there are things that's happening that it's not just because of racism. It's because the leadership we have is not making sure the people get to do those things that we need to do. And that's the big challenge for us.
Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that also, sir. Representative Joseph Dewey Jr. is who you are listening to. Those of you who are going to listen to this show later on, once again, this is State Representative Joseph Dewey Jr., District 97, and he's a state representative. Okay. Like I said, I agree with pretty much everything you're saying. On a lighter note, you have a favorite song or a favorite singer?
Let's see. Favorite song. I guess it would be, see, you got me there. I guess my favorite song would be a song by Maze that says, he talks about, let me see, I said the title, now you tricked me, the title, I'm thinking of the words. The song that says, I'm happy to see you and me back together again. That would
back
be my
together,
favorite song. I'd love that song to be the theme song for the black community. You know, for us to deal with each other the way we used to, where the value in the community was the us, the village, the community, where we looked out for each other.
Yes, sir.
You know, not this new value we've undertaken that talks about the I, the me, and the mine. So that would be my favorite song and my favorite artist, Maze.
Maze, okay. I was going to say, Ms. Melva Moore was on the show about over a year ago, and she had been on Show Talk with Angela Butler about three times, and she testified before Congress about the Negro National Anthem to make it, I guess, throughout the United States, the national anthem. So, so maybe you should do that. Maybe she won't be insulted by what I just said. Not by you, but what I just said. Because Miss Melbourne is a great woman. She really is. And Attorney Malik Shabazz was on the show two or three times. And last year, there was a blackout. When you talk about spending, and it just meant not spend. Don't spend. It was like from December, middle of December or early December to after New Year's, they just don't spend. And some people were concerned they had stock and things that was going to mess everything up, which it probably did. But the point of the blackout was not to spend.
You know, in terms of who actually does the spending in America. And I can understand the point she would want to make and would make. You know, imagine if we wouldn't spend or spend less, say, you know, because you got to buy food, and that's one of the kinds of issues. You know, when you look at who you buy your food from, who you buy your clothes from, you don't see many African Americans doing those things, you know, in that kind of business. So, but she's aware of what I just said, that, you know, the cash flow, the dollars that are being spent are primarily being spent by African-Americans.
Yes, sir. That's Attorney Malik Shabazz. He's easy to find on the Internet because he's representative. I was representative. Some people in Ferguson, Missouri, where the young man, the young 18-teenager, even though he's considered grown by law, I still consider him a teenager, Michael Brown Jr. Yeah. I thought it was great the way his parents testified before the Hague Committee. I'm not the Hague Committee, I'm sorry. The United Nations.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was wonderful. And he's the one that was talking that organized the blackout and started organizing Minister Louis Farrakhan. You know, really pushed it in a way, even though he didn't just endorse an economic blackout, but that's where it all stemmed from, Attorney Malik Shabazz.
Well, you know, that's one of the great things about this country is that our Constitution protects the right of the people to protest when conditions are not in accordance with the Constitution of the United States. And when we talk about, you know, social and economic justice and folk being equal regardless of race, creed, and color. The Constitution also says if at any time, this is the Declaration of Independence says in one of its lines, that if at any time this nation does not do what it is supposed to, it is the duty of the people to change what is being done. So it's really always up to the people. That's why we are a government by and for the people.
Yes. Okay. So, as a whole, Representative Joseph Beery Jr., as a whole, how do you feel like America, the direction America is going with the current administration of President Trump, as a whole, as America, direction America is taking?
Well, I'm concerned for the obvious reasons. You know, I mean, all around the world is concerned about the direction America appears to be going if we, and when I say we, I mean if the Congress would allow the president to do what he is advocating for. I mean, you know, there are issues of discrimination, there's issues of inequality. There's all kinds of things that could be the results of inappropriate and unfair policies if it was up to the president. And so I'm just happy we are a government that has representatives, and that even though when the respective Congress and state houses are majority Republican, you even still have some moderate Republicans who are not for the kinds of policies. So while I'm concerned about it, I have faith in what America has in its system of representation that I truly believe, and because I work with Republican colleagues who, at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, their conscience won't let them vote for things that will truly destroy our democracy. So I'm, while I'm concerned, I'm hopeful and I'm optimistic that this particular kind of pattern that we now have will change. You know, and if you look at the history of America, it's a pendulum. It goes back and forth. Right now, we're in one of those times where America is being challenged to demonstrate that we truly believe in the creeds of this nation, that America is for all of those. When you look at the Statue of Liberty and immigration, you see that's a contradiction to America. When you look at the fact that there are policies that discriminate against certain Americans, whether it's women, whether it's African-American, whether it's senior citizens, that is contradictory to the Constitution of America. And so our Constitution protects what is expected of Americans and of America. But the true responsibility to ensure that we adhere to the Constitution is in the American people, not just in the people we elect to represent us.
Yes, that's true. Yes, sir, that's true. All right, so.
Well, look, I got time for one more question. I got to get to a meeting, and I'm
okay.
Enjoying the show
right.
Very much, but
question.
I got to get to this meeting in the next 10 minutes, and so I need to be leaving my office.
Yes, sir, can I just ask two more?
Sure. I have to make them short answers, though.
Okay, what is your opinion about the previous president, first black two-term African-American president, and his two terms as president of the United States? And what is your opinion about President Obama's program, I Am My Brother's Keeper?
I think it's a good program, and I think the intent was what should have happened. And I was proud of President Obama's role and responsibilities as president. The only thing I would have hoped for is that he would have taken on some of the other institutional challenges that was impacting communities around the nation, including, in particular, the African-American community around public education. It appears to me that, the No Child Left Behind piece was the thing that carried the day until, of course, that policy was ultimately changed. But a lot of damage had been done before that. And even now, I know in my own state, we have some things going on with this charter school movement that it's not only hurting public education in general, but it's specifically hurting African Americans' public education.
Yes.
So that would be
yes,
my only take on that one.
I like his program, I Am My Brother's Keeper. This is the last question. As a husband and father, how do you feel about the murders of black people here in the United States by police officers, black women, black men, Mexicans, but especially Africans? How do you feel about that as a father? Husband,
oh, well.
About the
actually, look, and I'm gonna add black man to that because not just in my role as father and husband, but as a black man, I could,
yes.
I mean, I know I could be a victim at any time, regardless of the fact that I am an elected official. I don't have elected officials stopped across my face. You know, I'm just a black man in America, and so I could be one of those black men who have been shot. So clearly, my position is simply that not only is it wrong, but if we as a nation don't address it, we will carry ourselves to a point where we don't want to go. And that is, and I'm old enough to know and be here when we were under separate but equal. And I also lived and was a part of our movement for change in the 60s with the Civil Rights Movement, the Voters' Rights Act, and other issues that we were trying to address when there was systemic exclusions and oppression of black people. So I know what institutional racism can do. And it doesn't matter, you know, how many degrees you have, because I also have PhDs from several schools, including postdoctorate from Harvard. They don't care about none of that. They don't care about no PhD. All those kinds of racist police officers see is another black man. So I'm clear as a black man.